We love news in this business, and I think hopefully maybe we'll get some today about Fred VanVleet. We know he's going to – I think that's the place we got to start. Obviously, that's the biggest kind of tentpole issue for the Raptors in free agency. Serge Ibaka, a big one as well. But, you know, Fred's going to meet with some teams today. It does seem like the Raptors are the front runners, but I got to be honest, given all the money splashed around yesterday, we know the Knicks still have a ton of cap space. Not that I don't think the Raptors are front runners, but I guess my question really is, should they have a walk-away number? Is there a number for Fred that just gets too high, too astronomical, or is it kind of too important to keep this thing rolling that you've got with this kind of Raptors core?
Yeah, well, it's tough. It's two parts for me with Fred because he's in a great position of strength with the Raptors and maybe not as strong of a position as he would be otherwise in the NBA, given there's just not enough teams that have enough money to pay him that much more than the Raptors would, because I think if it was complete open season and there was a lot more teams with that kind of money, that he would get some kind of crazy offer. Just seeing some of the money that some of the guys signed for yesterday, that, you know, you would think that are barely contributors and making way more than Fred did last year. So I'm with you. I think it's in Toronto's corner to make it happen. I think that he's never going to take a hometown discount, but I think if everything is just at least close to where it is, then he's more comfortable where he is and will stay in Toronto. I'm pretty confident of that one, but don't go to the bank with it, so to speak. Yeah.
Well, I just, you know, you just put it perfectly there, Brad, and it's kind of what I was thinking about when I was waking up this morning and reading all these numbers that these guys got. Like, I don't know if I was expecting it to be cheaper. I don't know, with the pandemic, like, I was expecting these numbers to not be so astronomical, but it's not going to be a small contract that gets Fred VanVleet back here. Like, I know we've kind of just talked about it, but like that, those, some of those numbers, like a guy like Malik Beasley got 4 years, $80 million, 4 years, $80 million from the Minnesota Timberwolves. So to get a guy like Fred, you're going to be going higher and higher and higher here. Like, it's going to be a big contract to bring him back here. I always knew it was going to be, but maybe I wasn't prepared for how big it actually is going to be.
No, I agree. Cause that was kind of the number that everybody talked about, that all the, you know, up until a few months ago, is the Raptors would go 4 and 80. That was kind of the entry level, and saying, you know, if somebody goes 4 years and 100, would Fred have to leave? And so now we're talking, it's going to be somewhere between that to get him to stay. And here's a guy, you know, made $9 million the last couple of years and gets an NBA Finals MVP vote. And it's as funny as that sounded, that sounded like a good bargain when they talked about that deal, the last one he signed. Now you realize how cheap it was in reference and how much they were getting for Fred VanVleet. So it's time for him to get paid, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I know this stuff doesn't really matter, but like that picture of him screaming at Oracle with a bandage on his face, like that's an iconic picture now in Raptors history. And, you know, you talk about no hometown discounts. I think the only way maybe they could have got one is if they became the Rockford Raptors this year. Do you think there's any any kind of play with the fact that they're going to be playing in Tampa, whether that helps or hurts them? And, you know, it's just the uncertainty of whether you're there for half a year or part of this year or who knows how long. How do you think that will play with not so much Fred and Serge, because they know what this team's about, but, you know, if they're trying to bring guys in from outside of the organization?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was thinking of that yesterday. It kind of goes back, like, remember Tracy McGrady saying he wanted out of Toronto because it was too cold. So here you go. You know, it's not cold in Tampa. And it's like, if they were living in a bubble, because that was the initial thought, I think, for everybody, and myself included, when I thought, oh, they got to play in somewhere else, and then Tampa, you know, becomes a front runner before they announce that it was. And you're like, you know, that's a real disadvantage, because, you know, you wonder if that affected Pascal and the bubble and all that. And then you realize, no, it's not going to be a bubble. They're all going to rent homes. They're all going to be independent with their families. They're living the life that they're allowed to live everywhere else under restrictions of, you know, where you wear a mask and everything along those lines. I don't think it'll be a factor that someone go, oh, I'm going to sign because I get to play in Tampa for a year, but you're half a year, which I think it's going to be. I just think it won't be a factor, because people think, well, you get out of the Toronto winter, and half the cities in the NBA have the kind of winter that Toronto does. So it's kind of a break for those guys. Get some sun, get to play golf, they feel good, and there's no fans anyway. So I don't think it's going to make as big of a difference as it would if they were actually bubbled down there.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, I think that a lot of those guys would probably prefer to play in Florida and then in Toronto in the winter, but I digress on that one. I wanted to ask you about Serge, Brad, because, you know, there's been so much talk about how important, you know, Fred VanVleet was to this team, and, you know, how, like, you know, he talked about the MVP, the finals MVP vote there and what he brings to the team. But, man, Serge has been so huge for this franchise over the past two seasons. And like last year was amazing. The year before that obviously was amazing in the playoffs. You think of game seven against Philly, you think of a few games in the playoffs where they wouldn't have won without him. And I honestly think that him leaving could be as equally as impactful as Fred VanVleet, because he has just been such a huge part of the Raptors. And I don't feel like it's getting talked about enough. Do you think I'm out on a limb here, or do you think that, you know, him leaving is as impactful as Fred?
Yeah, I think it's become that way, and especially with the likely that Gasol won't be back, and what we saw from Gasol, you know, as much as he gave, and again, the Raptors don't win that championship without him. No. But this is this leaves the, you know, a complete hole at center if they don't bring Serge back. And it's also, it's suddenly, you know, it's great how players get reinvented, and maybe it's just because the game is where we thought that he was done, and you know, he's using the term dinosaur. It sounds like you're being trying to be stupid funny with the Raptors, but that's what people thought a couple of years ago with Serge. And now the way the game has changed, you know, he's the prototypical center that, you know, 6'10", 6'11", that he can shoot, he can guard guys, he can handle the ball, he can, you know, so many ways that he can contribute, and he just plays his butt off like not many players that we've seen. It seems like he found something too, another gear in that championship year when he was, and he was asked to take a secondary role, so to speak, and he's lived up to everything. So it's, I think it's an interesting one. I think there'll be more suitors, so to speak, for Serge, but he may not get as much money as Fred, but I think there's going to be a lot more interest. There's a lot of people that realize they could start a year without a guy, a big guy up front, because they're just few and far between now.
Talking to Brad Fay here on Sportsnet today, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. Obviously, you know, you mentioned Serge and everything he brings on the court. If they lose out on him, they're basically looking for exactly that type of player. And yeah, it's funny you mentioned how quickly perceptions change. It's like Serge at power forward a couple of seasons ago, this guy is cooked, and then you move him to the five. And oh man, it's funny how things fit perfectly. But speaking of fit, I feel like outside of, you know, Masai and Kyle Lowry, I don't know that there's, you know, and Fred VanVleet is right on par with him, but it feels like Serge is such a big part of, you know, we talk so much about in this league culture, how important it is. It feels like Serge is a really big part of that. I mean, maybe this stuff doesn't matter, but it feels like he did a great job of kind of bringing some of the younger guys out of his shell. We know him and OG had the whole thing this year. It just feels like he's a massive part of not just what they do on the court, but the culture that they're trying to sell everybody, including maybe someone next summer on.
Yeah, and I think he's, if you ask a lot of people, you know, he's become one of the most popular players because people know him, you know, beyond his on-court stuff with his fashion and with his cooking and his humor and that kind of stuff. And it's just, I've said it so many times before, but I firmly believe it isn't. This doesn't apply to Fred, but guys like Serge, guys that are international players, it just seem to really embrace Toronto. And that's why, you know, we kept hearing with Giannis being a possibility, because it's like, if you're coming, you know, if you're an American and you're used and you want this system, whether it's Antonio Davis raising the kids at school and you want your temperatures and everything that you're used to, you come from Europe, it's all that way anyway, or you come from Africa. It's like Toronto just seems to be a perfect melting pot. And it seems like Serge really found himself not only professionally, but also personally. I don't know, you know, we didn't get to see him much off the court, obviously, before he came here, but it just seems like the last couple of years watching the growth and his comfort level of, he really likes to be a citizen of this city.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you a draft question, Brad, because I was fascinated by the Raptors' first round pick, Malachi Richardson. Malachi Richardson's the guy who used to play in the NBA. Malachi Flynn.
Yeah, Flynn.
You know, it's 9/11 on a Friday, on a Saturday morning here. Give me a little bit of a break.
But I just, you know, really he's going to be Malachi within about a week. That's all everyone's going to call him. So you don't have to worry about the last.
It's a great name, Malachi. Like, it really is. It's one of those names that, you know, if you become, it is a first name, just go with that. But the Raptors have really seemed to, you know, pick out, not an inefficiency here, but they've sort of figured out what their type of guy is, you know, that they like to kind of build their guard position around. And I don't know if it's an inefficiency, but they've found these sort of hard-nosed defensive stalwart point guards that can kind of shoot it. And it really, that are sort of on the smaller side. I'm really fascinated by the Malachi pick, and I'm interested to see what he's going to become.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think you nailed it. When it gets that deep in the draft, and this is what the Raptors have done so well. You think how, you know, they've been working on a 7-year playoff streak coming into this year. So obviously they haven't been picking high, and they keep coming up with guys like Pascal and like OG. But it gets to that late. It seems like, if there's any question of the talent, the skill, they go with the character of the guy. And they had great meetings. Malachi Flynn said the same thing. I heard a guy on, it's very interesting because there's so many of these blogger insider guys. I was listening to NBA radio and I didn't hear what his name was, because they kind of said it quick when he left. But they asked him about the draft, and he says, this is not a guy from Toronto. This is an American-based guy. He said, my favorite player in the draft is Malachi Flynn. He said, I just love watching this guy. And winner led a great team that had that long winning streak. And he just says everything he does, that, you know, being a defensive player of the year, that he thinks they got a steal, which is cool to hear. And I also think that he just is that it sets him up perfectly for, you know, it's insurance. If they happen to not have Fred, he's not going to be a guy that's going to make that impact right away. But then you just look at the whole scale down the line. Once Kyle leaves, if Fred stays and Fred takes over, then you've got Malachi coming in, whether he plays with or behind. The same situations they've had with Fred and Kyle. So it's certainly part of their identity.
Yeah, that's true. And it's just, you know, it's interesting because you talk about, I've been doing a ton of reading on him ever since they drafted him. And, you know, I'm not a big college basketball guy, but by all accounts, like you said, he was, you know, leading this team that was sort of kind of looking at this year's tournament as maybe a possible team that's going to be like kind of have the potential to go deep. And, you know, let's say the college tournament happens, March Madness happens, the Raptors might not get him at 29, you know?
Yeah.
Like if he goes into that, we know how much that sort of has impact on the way
Absolutely.
People draft players. If he went in there and was a stalwart and they make it to the Elite Eight or something, there's no way they get him at 29. So no NBA tournament could have been a little bit of a coup for the Raptors to be able to get him at 29.
Yeah, and I agree that it made the draft really weird for a lot of us too, because so much of that exposure comes in the NCAA tournament. And I just found myself, you know, other than having to read up on guys, it was like at first glance when I looked at the projected top 20 or 30, it's like you used to, you know, know them all inside out. You used to know the 56 pick because you saw him playing. And so that was weird, but that's a great point. I think that's fair to say. But then you think when Fred, with Wichita State, when they made that deep run, very
True.
Similar team to San Diego State, and then still nobody took Fred, but it's worked out well for him. So there's similarities. I like someone said, yeah, the last time we got a guy from San Diego State, it worked out pretty well in Toronto. So that's
yeah,
cool
that's
too. But you know,
point.
Bring Kawhi back next year. Let's start that rumbling.
Yeah.
Probably never met the guy, you know. But let's get the San Diego State kids.
No, pour gas on that fire. Recruiting tool. I love it, Brad. But yeah, you mentioned the draft and how weird it was. Like, just think about the kind of bones that were there for this draft. It's like the Warriors are picking second overall. They take this 6'11 center who can run like a gazelle and can shoot it a little bit. It's like that should be the sexiest storyline going, or, you know, ruining the NBA, depending on what side of the fence you sit on. And it just felt like it just kind of almost went, you know, I don't want to say went by the wayside. We talked about it. We watched it. But, you know, in any other year where that guy was playing, and I know, you know, everything with Wiseman was a little different. He ended up leaving school. But it just feels like in any other year, that would have been an incredible, like, we would not have stopped talking about that. It almost would have made the NFL take a backseat in kind of general sports talk.
Yeah, and then I guess with the whole short window of the free agency coming up and the way everything's odd on the calendar, that I think everybody was, I know myself, tuning into the draft, I almost was hoping to hear of some kind of trade or some kind of, you know, rumbling of something happening with one of the big names. And obviously that's certainly been the case. None of them have moved yet. But I think that kind of took the headlines as well, because you realize this the draft was just going to be a small part of the shuffling. But remember when Golden State, when we knew they had the second pick, and there was that talk of, you know, Wiggins and the second pick for Pascal, which that was during the, you know, the playoffs right after the Raptors were knocked out and all that stuff. Nothing ever happened from that. And certainly the Warriors' time frame with the poor Klay Thompson, if that had happened the day before, then their approach may have been different. They would have probably been packaging that pick and everything else. So hard to believe it is off topic quickly, but those two free throws that Klay Thompson hit, which were some of the gutsiest things I can remember seeing. I was in the building that night. I was just, you know, it was spine tingling. And then that's going to be the last shots he takes for like at least 2 years in the NBA. It just, and for that franchise, the way everything went from that night is anyway off top. But he's such a good, Klay Thompson's one of those guys everybody loves to watch play. So it's a loss for everybody.
Yeah, Klay Thompson's probably, yeah, he's definitely my top five guys that you love to watch in the NBA. And it's, can you imagine, Brad, like, I've never had a really long-term injury like that. You know, I've had a few sprained ankles in my day, nothing too serious. But, you know, can you imagine tearing up your knee and then rehabbing it for however many long, and then you're finally getting back into the, you know, playing in some pickup games, and you tear your Achilles. Like, I know he's an extremely well, compensated guy. The money thing, you know, everyone, oh, he's rich, but like, what that would do to you mentally would be so, so hard. Like, it would be so much adversity to face that and try to come through it. I feel awful for Klay Thompson.
Yeah, and apparently how hard he worked to get back, they talked about it, as they all do. I think that's what we don't give enough credit for those guys. Like you said, they're getting paid anyway, but they want to play and they know the window is short. And I still wonder, too, if since it's the other leg, that it, whether it's the knee that he's favoring the one, you know, you think of these things, but it's all doesn't matter now. It's too bad. Because what if they go from being, I think they were the second or third pick as favorite to win the NBA championship to way down the line now. That's how quick it is. The NBA, you can't afford the loss of one of your two best players. It just doesn't happen.